Hey, everybody. This is Ian from Montreal, and you're listening to this episode of Ivy Envy Podcast, brought to you by awesome Patreon supporters just like me, even though my mommy's in Canadian. I don't know what that's good for. Go, Cubs, go.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast through a Google Plus Hangout.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
Because we use Google Plus, we're able to stream these episodes live. So if you go to ivmv.com/live at around 8:30 p.m. Central on Sunday and Wednesday evenings, you can watch everything happen, and there's also a chat to log into. So you can interact with everybody else that's watching. Let's just kind of jump right into this. Cubs had a pretty decent week. I'll take a 4-2 road trip. I'll take that all season long. They split the series with Pittsburgh 2 games apiece, and then they won in extra inning 7-3 on Friday. And then Saturday's game was rained out. And then today the Cubs won 5-2 on Sunday. This is when this is being recorded. The thing that stood out to me in these games is that the Cubs are in a lot of close games. 3 of the 4 games with the Pirates were one-run games, and then Friday's game went into extra innings. Even today, I mean, although I didn't really think it was going to happen, the Reds were within striking distance, I guess. I guess that's most baseball games. But
well, I think in that park, like a three-run lead is to always striking distance.
Well, and they do have, I mean, the Reds do have somewhat of a potent lineup. They're not very potent this year, but those are still, there's still some names in there that can scare you. Mm-hmm. So I guess let's look at the good and bad of this week, and specifically kind of the good and bad of these close games. I think first off, the good is they're competitive. They're not winning every single close game, but they're much better than they had been in the previous, you know, 4 years or so. On the last few episodes, we've been talking about how explosive this Cubs offense can be, and, you know, let's just look at, for instance, Friday night's game. Here's how the top of the 11th played out on Friday. Soler struck out, Rizzo singled, Bryant singled, Herrera singled, Castro was intentionally walked, David Ross doubled, and then Travis Wood lined out scoring Castro. So, I mean, there were, I would kind of identify 3 weak spots in that inning. And in those 3 weak spots, Herrera singled, Ross doubled, and Travis Wood lined out. And then, you know, Rizzo and Bryant did exactly what they would need to do in extra innings, just get on base. And really any batter that comes up in extras, just get on base and let the people behind you just kind of move you along, I guess. But I, you know, we're no longer... It's just, and I mean, I think I talked about this on last week's episode, but we don't get into extras, and I look at who's coming up and I think, well, no way we're scoring this inning. You know, I mean, it's just, it's such a weird feeling. That's why I keep bringing this up.
Yeah. Confidence is a kind of a weird thing. Like, especially in, you know, in terms of the Cubs, we're so used to that thought of like, well, I guess this game's over. I think you shared the stat last week how they were when trailing after 7 or 8. And it was like 0-79 or something crazy like that. And, you know, that conditions you to think a certain way. And now we don't really have to do that.
Well, and think about the fake rally hashtag that was born out of a lack of confidence. And now, like, we've seen a number of real rallies.
So, I do kind of, I'll have to admit, a part of me does miss the fake rally. What? Like, I don't here. No. Here's my request.
Why would you miss it?
Here's my. I don't know. It's like this, like abusive spouse. You know, it's like.
Well, we have talked about the fandom of the Cubs being an abusive relationship. Those were the during the dark years, everybody. So,
I don't know. I guess if the Cubs are going to lose, just for old time's sake, I'd like to see fake rallies take place.
No, I'm not with you there, but but yeah, right. I mean, it's good to see when they lose. It's not like it's like an acceptable loss. It's like, well,
right.
Yeah, they were close, but they couldn't pull that one off. Instead of like, holy cow, they just got beat down. You know,
well, and it is April. We will see some beat downs,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But
oh, absolutely.
But yeah, so far we're not seeing them. And you know, talking about getting into extra innings and then looking at the lineup of who's coming up in an inning and thinking. Yep, we're not scoring. I mean, it, now, even if it's the bottom of the lineup, you're thinking, hey, if a guy can just get on base, then the stronger bats are going to get up. And I really think Friday's game is a perfect illustration of kind of what the potential is. It was close. It went into extras. And then in the 11th, they just blew it wide open. And it gave them lots of insurance runs. And to be honest, I almost turned the game off in the middle of the 11th because I knew there was no way the Reds were going to put up four runs. I mean, when's the last, you talk about, you know, the confidence being kind of a foreign feeling for us. When was the last time like the Cubs, you felt like you could turn it off, you know, before the game was done. It's like, yep, we got this one.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
I don't know anything else. I mean, I guess I just kind of want to focus on the positives, and we're going to look at some negative stuff. And also, we have a slew, just a ton of listener questions to get to as well. But anything, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff to talk about, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just a general, another good note for me is just there's been some really good quality at bats as a whole. I know there's some guys that are kind of struggling, but like just the number of pitches they're making guys throw. And even in that save that Chapman got when they lost to the Reds, like they're still making contact against Chapman. I mean, Chapman is pretty much as close to.
No, they ended up winning that game. That was the game they won.
Was that? Yeah. No, I guess that was the previous series.
Oh, okay.
What was that? Okay, I'm blurring lines here, but anyway, I mean, even against Chapman, I guess in general, they're putting together at bats and they're making contact, and it's like, wow, you know, it's kind of neat to see even against the most dominant closer. Basically, what the whole Reds bullpen, that's all they got left is Chapman.
Right. Now, in Friday's game, I think Bryant got it. Didn't he get a single off of Chapman?
Yes,
I think he did. Yeah, I don't have that game pulled up, but I don't have any notes from that, but yeah. And it was kind of funny because it almost kind of seemed like rarely do you see a team kind of have the ability to, I mean, obviously Chapman doesn't come out and pitch perfect every single game, but it almost kind of felt like the Cubs had the upper hand in that situation, especially after Bryant got a base hit. You don't see that very often.
Well, how about speaking of good things like Joe Maddon's, was it a double steal or was it a hit and run?
Yes. It was a, right. Yeah, that was that in that inning?
Yeah, it was in that inning against Chapman.
Right.
Because you had Bryant at first and Rizzo at second, and they pulled the double steal. I'm not sure if it was a hit, if it was like just a blown hit and run or not, but at any rate, even, you know, the commentators like JD was saying that how awesome that was because you got to try to do anything you can to get an edge against Chapman.
Right. So it was and it that, Bryant on second?
Bryant ended up scoring. Yeah. And then he ended up scoring on the wood chopper, right? You know, if he wouldn't have pulled that, they wouldn't have
had an extra run. Yeah. And it was like, I mean, those are two guys on base that you wouldn't expect to be able to steal against Chapman, let alone steal third. But I think, like, if I remember right, whoever was playing third base for the Reds, I don't think they even saw it coming. Like, they were so late to the bag. Yeah. I think even if there would have been a throw, I think they would have been safe.
It's so awesome because it's such a spectacle on the mound. It's like kind of it's unexpected, I think.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Friday night's game, I, I don't, what do you guys think? I really dug the 1990 throwbacks.
Yeah, I do. I love those jerseys.
Yeah, I thought they looked. I remember not liking them. I think, like, maybe when I was younger. I don't know. I think when I was younger, I never liked the Cubs road.
I just. Yeah, I've always been a fan of the road gray. I like that.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, most of them, I kind of like the one that they currently wear with the Cubs. It weirds me out a little bit because traditionally you want Chicago on a road jersey, but I guess you can pretty much in the modern era throw those conventions out the window.
You're kind of a design guy, Kurt. What did you think? Like, what do you think about that kind of like blockier, if that's a word, a more blocky font, and like, and the letters were really small too.
Yeah, I do. I like it mostly probably for nostalgia more than from a design standpoint, just because I do like that jersey from it being around in the 90s. But, you know, from a design standpoint, it's probably not the best one they've ever had, but I do love it.
Yeah. Anything else positive you guys want to talk about? And I mean, like I said, I think we're going to get into more positive stuff as we continue, but...
I would like to say that just overall, like the hitting's been pretty great, especially the past 7 days. Mm-hmm. I know we'll talk about some specific players a little bit more, but I mean, there's a lot of guys coming through, getting hits, driving in runs over this past week.
And Len and JD pointed a little bit today about hitting to the opposite field, and they kind of was like mm-hmm. a little montage of hits to the opposite field. That was pretty impressive because I don't know if it's good coaching or just this collection of players getting it, but yeah, the hits to the opposite field have been impressive. And you know, Addison Russell had an amazing hit almost just shy of a grand slam today to the opposite field that was really impressive. So
that was great to see.
I was listening to the radio broadcast today, and Pat and Ron talked about they brought up the fact that Castro is hitting to the opposite field really well. Mm-hmm. And they said that's a really good sign from him, because when he's doing that well, he's hitting well, you know, he's so they were saying that's a good sign early in the season to see him doing that.
Yeah. I mean, since you brought up Castro, I mean, how about him just generally speaking? I mean, he had that really, really great play, that diving mm-hmm. play at short today. And he just rifled the ball. Like just, it looked like a slingshot over to Rizzo, after he had dove to knock down a ball. And so he's been, I overall, I feel like he's been playing great defense, and the guy is also just, he's hitting, you know, and he's hitting .360 in the last 7 days, and he's driven in six games, I should say.
Yeah.
He's definitely hitting the ball well. I think he's got like 20, he's got over 20 hits already, which, yeah. It's amazing.
I think it would be interesting to look at. I mean, the Cubs are just putting up a good amount of runs right now, and it would be interesting to look. I mean, this would not be a hard thing to look at, but I'm kind of curious like what their average runs per game was last year to this date, and then what it is this year, because we've seen over the last couple of years, the Cubs start off really slow, really cold. You know, nobody was really hitting. They couldn't produce any runs. They were getting, I mean, think about how many years in a row we got like really good pitching performances out of the starting pitching, and then the bullpen blew it and they could not score runs. And I mean, this is like a totally different team. And it is.
Really. Yeah, now we're in a situation where the bullpen is kind of struggling with some injuries, and at the very least, your offense can kind of save you from some of those bullpen struggles, and they have before. So yeah, it's a different scenario where instead of you have like, you know, two or three weaknesses, now a couple of strengths can pull those weaknesses up. So
right,
yeah, it's kind of nice to see.
I think they've scored like 93 runs in April. I tried to do some quick math, but that seems like a lot.
Seems like a few.
Guys, that seems like a lot. Here's some expert analysis for you. I mean, just it feels like a lot.
So let's look at the negatives of all of these close games that they have right now.
Yeah, well, I guess you could look at the fact that it's hard on the bullpen. I mean, they had that extra innings game, and then the starters, generally speaking, haven't pitched very deep into games, which I guess is kind of part of, you kind of expect that maybe in April, for them to go a little bit shorter as they still are getting stretched out a little bit. But the bullpen stretched thin with the injuries to Grimm and Ramirez, and so they're trying to plug some holes there. It hasn't exactly been a resounding success. You know, Schlitter comes to mind. But they found a few guys in there that are working pretty well, like Ross Cup and German, Herrmann. I'm pretty positive.
Lynn's saying German, so I think we can go with that.
Yeah. Well, okay. Good job. We have the gringo pronunciation down. No, but I mean,
here's the deal. I was listening to Pat and Ron, and they talked about how they assumed that it was pronounced like Hermaine or Herman or something, and he said German. That's what he told them.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling that these guys are just like, the guys are going to pronounce it that way anyway, so just go ahead.
Here, maybe it's like it's German. Maybe it's a Alcantara and German are like just, you know, tricking everybody. Like, oh, yeah. let's still,
you know, sorry. You know, the other strange thing is that his middle name is like German, German. And his last name is German. His name is Gonzalez German.
No, it's not. Are you serious? It is. That's not real. So,
well, according to the internet, that is his name.
And, but I mean, can you imagine, what if his name were pronounced Herman? I mean, can you imagine like an announcer being like, here and up to pitch right now, like Len Casper, Gonzalez Herman? It just like, it would sound like pretentious, like he was being, just say, and people would just say German, dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
his parents wanted to go for the triple G's.
That's so bizarre.
Well, it's German.
Well, that makes more sense, because I was looking at MLB trade rumors and they spelled his name German with an E at the end the first time, and then later on in the article they spelled it A-N. There's like, German, whatever. Yeah, but maybe it was like the because of the middle name that threw him off. But anyway, I looked up the bullpen's numbers, and I expected them to be obscene, you know, how many innings pitched these guys have. But really, they have 54 relief innings pitched this season, which puts them 19th in MLB overall. So actually, comparatively, like, they have quite a few. They have fewer innings pitched than a lot of teams. But yeah. They're 10th in the last 7 days. So their workload has picked up. And it can't continue like this. I mean, the starters do need to have some deeper outings for sure.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if the reason that we're not seeing the starters go real deep into the games. I mean, like you said, it's April. They're still kind of stretching out. The weather's still kind of chilly and everything. But, you know, this is a really good rotation. And I would like to see this rotation healthy and still have some, you know, ammunition come August, September. Maybe we're seeing Madden just kind of keep a few bullets in the chamber and
keeping with the triple G theme. Bullets in the chamber, blat, blat.
I don't know where to go from
this. No, I don't know. Just take it, Kurt. It's all you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I even know what's next.
Well, we were talking about the negatives of all these close games. I don't know if you had anything to add.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's certainly a little bit, had some weird roster situations happening where Chris Bryant suddenly is your number two center fielder. That's definitely not ideal. And I think part of this, you know, it's injuries, and it's also, you know, carrying three catchers has hurt a little bit. And for the most part, I think the carrying the three catchers hasn't been a huge problem, but, you know, now that
sounds like somebody's changing their tune.
Hey, well, you know, Ross hits a double, scores some runs. I
was going to say, when you bring up catchers, you know, I think we need to mention how you bashed David Ross just 4 days ago on the midweek episode. Then look at how big of a role he played in Friday night's game. Kurt, are there any other players you would like to complain about since your predictions and your opinions seem to be pretty wonky right now? I was thinking maybe you could complain about Soler so he can get back on track. Do you want to predict that Baez will suck and be in Iowa all season?
I should just say, Soler's going to strike out 400 times this year. And then he'll never strike out again. It is still one hit, and I guess to some degree I'm turning the corner on David Ross as a clubhouse guy and a pure backup. But
you guys predicting four Ross bombs this season. and he's had two almost clear the fence, and you don't know how hard I've been praying for a little Zephyr to kick up and push it over.
Well, all I know is you're four away from being right there, Andy.
Yeah.
There's still a long season ahead of us. But it does. Okay, so but the reality is it does hurt you when you've got some position players down and you might need that roster spot. Because, if you didn't have three catchers, you've got Matt Caesar, Junior Lake up and playing that backup outfield role. The Cubs need another outfielder. And right now it's kind of odd because, you've got Bryant as your starting third baseman, but he's also your number two left fielder, your number two center fielder. Because Alcantara's back in Iowa, so that kind of pulls some depth out of the outfield. And Fowler had a little bit of a groin injury on Wednesday, so he missed Thursday. And so Bryant, I think that's when Bryant played the center. It's just, it puts him in a tough spot because, at third, then you have to put Herrera over there. It's just tough. They don't have enough position players and enough of those sort of utility guys like Matt Caesar, I think, would be a nice addition right now if you didn't have those three catchers.
Yeah,
right. To try to play some left.
And they're kind of relying on Travis Wood to play that role.
Yeah,
I'm ready to be done with the three catchers, man. I'm seriously.
Yeah.
I'm guessing Madden
still
is
like
too.
Wellington, but he's gonna prove he does have some good value, and I'd like to see them get some return on that.
Right, I don't dislike Wellington by any means, but. Man, they need to figure out something with that three catchers situation.
Yeah. Right.
But I do want to give a little rah-rah to the front office and the Herrera signing because, December 3rd, I guarantee we didn't talk about Jonathan Herrera being signed. Maybe we did, but it was 2 seconds of time spent on him. And now you've got, he's got some years under his belt. I guess you could call him a veteran who can play all the infield positions outside of first. I suppose he could play first if he needed to, but he can play second, third, and short. And he can kind of hit a little bit. He's had a clutch hit and he's not terrible at the plate. So, you got to give him a little credit for a signing like this, which is just a low risk, but is really paying off now just to kind of get you through this injury wave.
Right. And somebody that you're not tied to, that you can toss in the garbage when
and that, I think this is the Lester signings get all of the attention in the world, but these Jonathan Herrera signings get zero attention.
Right.
But the reality is this kind of signing is what gets you through a potential disaster. They've had some tough injuries here, and they're still playing well and still winning games. And I think Herrera has been a key part of that. Because he's so versatile.
All right. Well, we'll give you that. Theona's bumbling band of misfiring misfits got one right.
He got one. Well, then there's always Edwin Jackson that we can pull on him.
Right. Yeah. So I think the close games have kind of been one of the main storylines this week. As far as the rest of the week goes, I think one thing that stands out to me in a good way is the starting pitching. It feels like the starting pitching has been a little bit rough this week, I guess. Wood gave up 3 runs in 5 innings. Hamill gave up 4 runs in 5 innings. Hendricks gave up 3 runs in 5 1/3. But I don't know. I guess put it into context of what starters have looked like in the past. And it's like, we're kind of expecting a lot. So Lester pitched twice in this last week. He gave up Six runs in 11 and a third innings. Arrieta gave up one run in seven innings earlier this week, and then today two runs in six innings. So I guess those aren't a ton of runs. And I guess when you start looking at it too, the teams aren't getting a lot of hits off of these guys. Like, you know, this morning Beyond the Box Score tweeted that the Cubs are tied for the best starting rotation in FIP. They're tied with the Pirates. And we haven't really seen Lester pitch like we think he can. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't really been as masterful as I think he probably has the potential to be. But, I mean, really...
Much better outing this last one.
Right.
Much better.
Yeah. And so I think that, like, I don't know, day to day it's like, oh, well, like, you know, starting rotations... You know, I don't know. I guess it's just like the matter of how quickly our expectations change, and that really giving up three runs in, you know, five or six innings is not, when you have this offense, it's not that big of a deal, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not all going to be Jacob Arrieta one run in seven innings. You know, we can't.
Jacob?
Jacob?
Is that not his name? Sorry. I probably said Jake and then just went to Jacob. I don't know what I did. and we were talking about the bullpen being used a lot, but Roskopf, Koch, German, Jackson, Rondon, and Strope. If I counted right, quickly before we started recording, they've had in the last week, they've had 15 innings pitched, and combined they've allowed just two runs. Now, I think Mott and Schlitter, on the other hand, that's what's kind of distorting
They've combined all runs. They've given up all runs. Right.
Yeah, they've pitched sixth and a third innings between the two of them, and they've given up eight runs. So I think like Mott and Schlitter are kind of distorting our view of the bullpen, when really like Roskopf, Koch, German, Jackson, Rondon, and Strope have looked pretty damn good. I mean,
Strope has been like, I mean, his ERA is still zero, and he's like, his batting averages against is almost nothing. He's been amazing.
Yeah, and I really have enjoyed watching Roskopf pitch too.
Yeah. Yeah, and today he kind of got into a pinch and worked his way out of it with the strikeout. So it was, I got a little nervous there, but.
He struck out Votto.
Yeah, he struck out Votto.
Yeah.
So that was. Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah. I don't know. This season has just been, it's been a lot of fun so far. And, I mean, it's not like the Cubs have gotten off to the start that like the Mets have or anything like that. But after this 4 to 5, 6 year period we've been through, this season is a ton of fun. But I think that the team is having a lot of fun too. And I think these guys are excited to play together. I don't know, like we have. They've been waiting for this to come together. You know, this is what is happening on the field has to be so much fun for guys like Rizzo and Castro.
Yeah, absolutely.
But thanks to Twitter, we know they're having fun.
They take selfies of each other and send them out.
Man, I got to say, Cubs Twitter has been so entertaining this season. If you guys aren't following, anybody who's listening, if you're not following Miguel Montero, he'd be like my number one choice for Cubs Twitter handle to follow. He's just like delightful. He seems unbreakable, like Kimmy Schmidt or something. Like the guy, he's really bright. People will call him out on his English and stuff, and he's just like, "Hey, yeah, my first language is Spanish." It's just like everything seems to roll off his back. I think he's the guy who got the hashtag We Are Good started.
He did. Yes.
Yeah. And I love it. Like that's like everywhere now. Like he tweeted back on April 18th. Wow. With two O's in the middle. Nice win. OMG. Hashtag We Are Good.
I can't wait to see the first custom jersey with We Are Good as the name.
Oh man. I love it.
Already people are making t-shirts of it, like in an M shape and stuff. But, he like it back in December after he'd been at Cubs convention, he tweeted, "I just been a Cubs for 24 hours and I love it. LOL." The guy is like, he's just really delightful. Here's another one. from April 21st. Did you guys see how I ran to first in my walk? LOL.
Yeah, I did see that one.
It's hilarious. So, like, I picture him like getting a walk, running to first, and be like, "Oh, I got to tweet that."
He during the rain delay, he tweeted, "Okay, guys, I'm going to play some dominoes with this Cuban guy, Jorge." And then my other favorite one from him was, "Hey, seriously, I'm a really bad pitch hitter, LOL." I think he meant to say pinch hitter, but he just said pitch hitter. Oh, man, I love it. But and one really awesome thing about just the Cubs in general is they've been responding to fans a ton. I mean,
yeah.
Lester will sit there for hours and just respond to fans. Jake Arrieta, too, is becoming prolific at responding to fans. And, in fact, Beth was telling me, we think we saw him learn Twitter at Cubs convention. you know, the Cubs social media guy, Corey? We saw him explaining Twitter to Arrieta, and now it's like you cannot tear him away from it. But follow Jake Arrieta, if, you know, anybody who's listening, if you're not, at jarrieta34. First of all, his user pick is a pick of him as a kid in a Little League uni, but with a beard added. So right away, it's pretty awesome. But here's one of my favorite tweets from Arrieta. A fan asked him, "What, if any, changes did Chris Bosio help you with? How do you explain your recent success?" And he tweeted, "It tells me to breathe through my kneecaps. Useful." I was just so surprised how much he's responded to fans. And you know, I counted something like, I just kind of breezed through it, like over 300 direct responses to fans since like April 22nd.
Wow. Yeah, that's really cool. It's so interesting that, you know, through social media now you can actually connect with, which is a good and a bad thing. You know, I mean, I think that, so anybody listening to this, like if a player is doing poorly, please don't tweet at him. You know, I mean, and that might be part of it, Andy. You know, maybe Cubs players in the last few years have not received very positive stuff.
Sure.
Feedback on Twitter. And so they just kind of steer clear of it.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. I mean, it's worth noting that it is easier to be a Twitter presence right now when there's all kinds of adulation pouring in. But right. Still, I mean, these guys are doing a great job of it. And if you're not on Twitter following some of the players, I'd say you're missing out a little bit. There's some pretty entertaining stuff.
Yeah. I think the whole like hashtag we are good. I love it so much. I think it's amazing. And the funny thing is like, I understand that the Cubs need to market themselves, you know, but they've really had some duds for slogans in the past. And I think that hashtag let's go is a definite improvement, but we are good. Wish
let's go or we are good though.
Yeah, we are good. I think we'll pick up way more steam this year. You know, yeah. I think that will be what people use for this year. And I think brands have to try to plan and strategize social stuff, but the best stuff happens spontaneously. And I don't know. Yeah. I just like every time I see we are good hashtag, I just giggle.
I think he puts it on every tweet now too. Like he pretty much like, "Hey, did you see me run to first? We are good." I mean, he puts it on everything, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's amazing. This is our seventh season of podcasting, and I was trying to think today, and I don't think since our first season in 2009 have we really had to pay much attention to the other teams in the division. And I was trying to think of like, it's so hard for me to even put myself back into 2009. I just can't even remember what we were doing. I don't really remember too much of what the Cubs were doing, but this year I'm watching what the other teams are doing every night. I guess you guys could say I'm tracking those games.
He's got a compass and a map.
But there was a big development in the NL Central last night. Adam Wainwright was injured and he is now on the Cardinals disabled list.
Yeah. it was, I guess this is the very definition of freak injury, where he was at bat and he hit a pretty standard pop up to the infield, kind of stood there for a second, you know, expecting it to be caught, and then thought, oh, well, I should probably run. And he took off to run, and whoop, he didn't go far. And then he was limping his way, you know, took a few steps and almost went down. You know, you could tell right away it was a pretty serious injury. It wasn't just like, ooh, that kind of hurt a little bit. The trainers came out, kind of helped him off the field. And the way he took off, I think it was his left ankle. You could tell it could have been like an Achilles type injury. And that's the report now, is some sort of Achilles injury. He'll have a MRI tomorrow, but a lot of the initial sort of source reports are that this is a season ending injury. For Wainwright. It hasn't confirmed yet, you know, he'll have his MRI, but most people are thinking like this is it for him this year. So, you know, that's a tough break for the Cardinals, you know, to lose your, and you kind of, as much as you don't like the Cardinals, you have to feel for him a little bit, like, you know, John Lester hitting a pop-up and then going out like that, that right. would be pretty tough to swallow. So yeah, he looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, that sucks. I mean, I hate seeing players get injured. I really hate seeing pitchers get injured. And I mean, I think there's probably some Cubs fans that are happy, I guess. But you know, as far as I'm concerned, I want the Cubs to be able to beat the Cardinals at their best.
Yes.
And I don't want anybody to get injured. I mean, that's their livelihood. And I mean, yeah, sure, he's made a ton of money and he will continue to make a lot of money. But I don't know. You just hate to see that out of, you know, that happened to ball players. But I want the Cubs to beat the Cardinals with everybody they have.
Right. And let's say that they do. I mean, then you can already almost hear what fans of other teams are going to say. Well, it was because, like, we didn't have so-and-so. I mean, the Brewers, too, are kind of in a dire injury situation too, and yeah, I want the Cubs to win, and I really don't care too much how it happens, but I would rather that they win and they beat teams that are excellent than teams that are just kind of patched together because of injuries.
Well, and the other side of it is, like, as much as, you know, I really, really don't like the Cardinals, but the reality is the Cardinals are the team that can battle through something like this. They always do.
Right, yeah,
that's what irritates the hell out of me about the Cardinals is,
right,
you know, they have something like this happen and then they're still there. They pull off a wild card and then
they still have, you know, somebody in the system to plug in, and he'll be amazing.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, I wouldn't count out the Cardinals.
No, not at all. No. No way. So do we dive into the NLDH discussion here, that this wouldn't happen if the National League had the designated hitter. And
I will say that, you know, there's definitely got to be two. I mean, the way it was sort of so freakish, the way he took off, like, that thing was probably going to pop no matter, you know, something was going to happen. You know, he fields a grounder, pushes off, I guess it was his left, but
yeah,
you know, something, that thing's going to pop if it popped that easily. But again, to your point, I'm starting to come around.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I think a lot of the people that don't want to see the DH in the National League are kind of, you know, don't want it for tradition's sake, or, you know, just for the purity of what the National League has been or whatever. I mean, I think we've talked about this, but it's probably been a long time. And Andy, I don't even know where you stand on it.
Yeah, I just think they should have 8 spots in the batting order. I like it. I actually like the pitcher having to hit. I like the additional strategy that it creates. There's something about the fact that all the players that you put out there on the field have to do their, you know, have to play their role at the plate as well.
Yeah.
But that being said, this injury does, it's one more thing that makes me think, well, you know, maybe the people crying for the DH and the NL are onto something, you know, cause I think the game suffers to have a player of his stature go down.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I understand what you're saying about the strategy and things like that. But I think the big difference is that they have that baseball has become so much more, the positions, especially pitcher, have become so much more specialized. You know, you have starters are very specialized in what they do. Now, it's not like, you know, in the old days where they would have a guy and he just threw a complete game, you know, back in, you know, 80 years ago or whatever, you know, or like even recently is in our, you know, in our lifetime, they would maybe have one reliever come in and finish a game or something like that. Now everything is so much more specialized. Everything, like there's pitching changes a lot more often. You have your setup guy and your closer. And it just seems like everything is so much more specialized. And because of that, like, why would you want to risk injury on things that, like, these guys have never, you know, they don't train on that. They don't practice that so much. And it's like, I don't know, the game has changed, I think. And I understand wanting to, like you said, Andy, like, everybody's got to carry their weight at the plate. If you take the field, you have to bat too. But on the other hand, like, I don't know, if it was Jake Arrieta getting injured, like, I would be really disturbed, or, you know, it would be really frustrating.
I would say within the last year, I've gone from 100% absolutely not, the NL need, you know, pitchers need to bat in the NL, to probably more of like a 60-40, where I still, like Andy just pointed out, I still like the concept and the tradition of pitchers batting because they're playing the field. But, you know, I'm definitely coming around in a hurry to this idea, because, you know, it provides some other opportunities for guys to continue their career a little longer as a DH. And I don't know, I'm sort of reluctantly giving in to it. Just, yeah. I think I sort of feel like it's inevitable. And I think if they made the call to go for it, I'd be okay with it.
I'm sorry, Kurt. I don't know if you guys can hear. Can you hear Kurt's chair? It sounds like you're like, it sounds like as you're talking and it's creaking, I just picture you like sitting on like a front porch on a rocking chair. Just
this is how much movement it requires for me to tweak the chair. Sorry, I have no control, and it's an IKEA chair, so it's gonna squeak.
I just picture you being in like a rocking chair on a wooden, like in Mayberry, sitting there talking about how the DH should not come to the National League.
I think it's perfect. I did this intentionally. I worked on the squeak. I got the squeak dialed in so I could be the old guy.
I couldn't figure out which one it was coming from.
Oh, and you were now talking, I have to try really hard not to move for the rest of the episode because it's so touchy.
Well, back to the topic. Can I just say that one other thing that might be divisive for people is the fact I like the fact that there's a difference between the leagues. You know,
I hate it.
Hate it?
No, I hate it. I hate that they're, it's the same professional sport, but they have different rules.
I love it. Yeah,
it is cool. Unique. I mean, it is kind of neat. I don't know. I just can't get past the injury thing. You know, that's always been kind of my, okay, I guess I have like one main reason that I would be in favor of it, and that is injuries. My second reason, which is completely ridiculous and should not even be a reason, was that I saw, you know, the last couple of years, I was like, you know what? This Cubs offense is going to be absolutely ridiculous, and we're going to have too many guys. And so, you know, right. Like, we're going to have too many shortstops. One of them needs to be a DH, or, you know, Dan Vogelbach, if he happens to come up, you know, it'd be really nice to be able to slide him into a DH position. So, I mean, it was kind of that selfish, like, oh, things are playing out, this may play out this way for the Cubs. But really, I mean, like, I just, even Lester, look at how much money they spent on him. Wouldn't it just absolutely suck if, you know, a dude that never gets a base hit, if he was injured out of, you know, just for some stupid reason? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess, well, but just as you said that, it popped in my head that, well, that's just professional sports, you know, like he could just as easily, you know, trip on some rut in the mound. You know what I mean? Freak injuries are going to happen. and you can't make rules based on him. But
he could injure himself trying to throw over to first.
No, he could pull his back out sneezing.
I know. I'm just saying that, like I said, everything's so specialized, and the positions, you know, I don't know. I've said enough.
No, I definitely see your point there.
If you shop on Amazon.com, be sure to go to ivmv.com and click on the Amazon link on the right side of our website. If you do that, Amazon gives us a percentage of their profits. Well, their profits from your purchase, just not their general. It's not their overall profits, but it does not cost you anything extra, and it helps us pay the podcast bills. So let's look at some listener questions here. We have a lot to get through, so we're going to kind of breeze through them quickly. I asked for these on Facebook and Twitter. We are at IVMV on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook at ivmv.com/Facebook, and we are also at IVMV Podcast on Instagram. So the first one here comes from Matt Macer, associate producer of this podcast. He says, do you think the postponement of division games this early in the season helps or hurts the Cubs?
Gosh, helps. I mean, it helps. Yeah, man, if you're going to play it later on in the season, you know, June, July, August, I think that it helps the Cubs, especially a team that has a lot of power potential. You know, once you get into the warmer weather and the ball's going to be flying out of the park more. I think it can't, you know, obviously it's going to help both teams, but I think it favors the Cubs also just because they have a lot of guys that have the potential to hit a lot of homers.
Yeah, I think it just depends on when the games are made up and what the health of the Cubs, what their health is at that point, the Cubs, and I guess how they're playing at that time. You know, I mean, a game could easily be made up when the Cubs are in the middle of a skid, you know, and I don't know. The rain out with the Cardinals in the second game of the season, that's probably a good thing. The Cubs lineup now looks a lot better than it did in that opening series. But if you look at this Red series, the rainout means I look at that series and I think, okay, that rainout means that the Cubs don't get to face Jason Marquis, you know, like they did. They would have today.
Good point.
And so I think I would guess that in some situations it's a good thing. And in some situations it's a bad thing. I think it probably evens itself out, and I think it just depends on whatever the luck is of a pitching matchup and stuff like that. Chris says, with Russell at second base, do you think that hurts Baez's chances of being back up with the club? Would he be trade worthy for a bottom of the rotation pitcher? To kind of go along with that, a similar question, Jason Nunn, he's also an associate producer of this podcast. He says, what's going to happen with Tobias if he starts lighting it up when he comes back? Where does he fit in with this team?
It definitely doesn't help him. I you know, having Russell there, but it's tough. It's tough to make predictions, especially too, on a guy that's coming back from such a horrible thing.
Right.
You know, it's tough to, I don't know. I have a hard time making predictions about a guy's baseball future after he's coming out of this. It's sort of like I'm in the position of wait and see what he does, you know, let him have his time. But I feel for him.
Yeah, me too. I don't think Russell playing second hurts his chances of being up with the Cubs. If anything, I think it relieves some of the pressure off the Cubs. They can wait and call him up when he's ready rather than, well, he's got a ways to go, but we need him now. You know, kind of like what happened with Russell, I guess. I'm not sure he's a valuable trade piece right now. If a club is looking at his 2014 numbers, he's got potential, but that batting average and that on-base percentage, you know, 167 batting average, 227 on-base percentage, that's going to scare teams away. And I think the Cubs could trade him now, but they're not going to get the return that they want.
I agree.
Still, I think that his ceiling and the fact that he was a high first round pick would cause some teams to be willing to take a chance on him if they had an expendable piece, but
right.
It's not going to be the best piece, like you said.
Yeah. And then as far as Jason's question, what happens to Baez if he starts lighting it up when he comes back, and where does he fit in? I mean, I think we've seen how Madden has used this team so far. He'll get pieces to fit in.
Right.
My guess is that perhaps Bryant moves to left field and Baez plays mm-hmm. some third base, you know, if he is, as Jason says, lighting it up, they'll work him in. I'm not, right. you know.
Good play find is going to find its way to the field.
Yeah.
In some yeah. way.
Nick from Wisconsin says, discuss the possibility that Addison Russell was brought up to showcase him for potential trades.
I don't buy that.
Yeah, I don't think so at all.
I think he's so good that this isn't a piece that you're shopping. You know, you don't become the number 1-2 prospect by accident. So,
yeah,
I don't think he's on the market.
Yeah, I think the Cubs saw a competitive team and they felt like they might as well just go for it and make this 2015 team as strong as they can. I have a hard time believing they traded for Russell just to trade him away. You know, I think they like him and they want him.
Yeah, when they saw Russell as an option in that trade, they were probably wetting themselves, and I just can't see them, you know, like just quick flipping in the next right. season and saying, okay, well, he's a piece. You guys can have him.
Quick, hand me the oops, I crap my pants.
Well, I mean, he's compared to Barry Larkin. I don't think you trade away a 21-year-old that draws those comparisons. And I think the Cubs kind of called, they kind of surprised us when they called him up so quickly. And if they believe they can make a push, I think we're going to see them very active around the trade deadline. But I don't think Russell's going to be in the picture. I don't think they'll be trading any big pieces away. I think they'll be trading away guys like Travis Wood and, you know, maybe some other prospects, perhaps Dan Vogelbach. That kid is absolutely tearing it up in Tennessee. Like, I almost hope they don't, like, just leave him there and just let's see what he can do. Like, you could call him up to Iowa, but I just want to see him, like, just destroy the Southern League. Because, I don't know, one thing I'm really enjoying with doing the new, you know, the daily Northside Recap podcast is just how I get to look at Vogelbach every night, you know. So before today's game, listen to this slash line. 460, 571, 780. He has 7 doubles and 3 home runs in 14 games. Just playing out of his mind.
But the 3 home runs have come in the last week.
Right, yeah.
Speaking of really valuable assets, I mean, if he continues along those lines, I mean...
Trade that guy to the AL.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, I think we are all in agreement that Russell, I just can't see them trading him away. They don't. Yeah, I just don't see it. Tom says over under on Addison Russell home runs, and he sets it at 16.
12 under.
Yeah, I'll take under also.
Yeah, I'm doing under. I don't know how many, but I'm going under.
Like I said on the last podcast, he had a, you know, 4 seasons in the minors and he hit a decent number of homers, but it's not like the biggest tool in his box, you know?
Right.
Tool in his box.
David says, should we be concerned about Lester's slow start, or is he finally starting to come around? Bonus question, when will he record his first hit?
Concern, no. What was the rest of it? Sorry, I'm reading. I'm not concerned. Go ahead, guys.
I think that if he stays healthy, he gets a hit at some point.
Yeah, I think he will too. It'll probably be like a little infield dribbler that just kind of like lands out, you know, just rolls out there into no man's land.
At least he doesn't look crazy up there.
True, yeah. He's decent. I think he is going to come around. I still don't think he's feeling 100%. But if you look at his numbers, he's not pitching that poorly. His numbers, a lot of his numbers are actually better than the last few years. He's striking out almost 10 per 9 innings. That's up from 9 last year, 7.5 in 2013. He's walking about the same amount as he did last year, just over 2 per 9 innings. He's giving up fewer home runs, but where his numbers are really hurting is BABIP. His BABIP is 424, which is crazy. And that's up from right at 300 last year, which is right at league average, about 300. So what that means is he's been very unlucky, and
yeah,
we'll see that number drop. And that will make him seem more effective, dropping his ERA and everything. And if you're not familiar with BABIP, that measures how often a ball in play goes for a hit. So it takes out all the balls not in play, strikeouts, home runs. So, I mean, it's just 424 is goofy. And I mean, you just have to chalk that up to small sample size and it'll even itself out. I mean,
right. Because it's been shown that once a ball's in play, I mean, the pitcher, you know, doesn't have any control over it, you know? Right.
Yeah. Yep.
That's so obvious.
Michael from Colorado says, what is your opinion of Madden style so far this season? Players seem to be having fun, but many fans are getting nervous with odd pitching and bench choices. He says, including me.
Yeah, it's tough to argue when it works. I think maybe we'll have a different tune when some of this might backfire. I mean, there's been a couple of times, like what did Lester come up with the bases loaded a couple of times? Certainly the pitcher batting eighth didn't work there, but I think you have to look at it more broadly, as a whole. And I think in that sense, Madden knows what he's doing. And so there's going to be times when it looks stupid and it doesn't work. But as a whole, I think it'll work out in a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's been forced into making some odd bench right. choices.
Exactly.
Because of the way the team is constructed at this time.
Right. Injuries and short bench and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he has been pulling pitchers kind of earlier rather than later. And that's led to, you know, some bullpen guys giving up some runs, but
right.
I think, you know, once we get a more of a full season under, and once he gets more of a full season under his belt, you know, it'll be easier to look at some of these things and how effective they were, you know,
yeah,
the pitcher eighth.
And when he goes out and calls for Schlitter and says the fat guy with the beard with hand motions, you know that it's not his first choice.
Doug says, what are you more in love with, Chris Bryant's swing or his eyes?
Hmm.
For me, it's his smile.
Oh.
here's what really, this is what I've really enjoyed watching him. If you watch like every play, he just has a huge smile on his face.
Like, I've noticed a couple times. I think part of that is just his newness. Like he's so excited to be there.
I don't know if it's that or if it's, I think it's probably like, I don't think he realizes he's doing it, you know, but it's just like, he looks like he's having fun. He looks natural. I don't know. I just, he's so much fun to watch. Come on.
His swing, get out of town. His swing is amazing.
I'm just saying, like, if you watch him in the field, like when he fields a ground ball and goes to throw to first, he's got like a huge grin on his face.
That's great, but just his swing is amazing.
Okay, Jeremy says, if the team continues to play like this, and they will win over 90 games. Do you see a scenario where Madden doesn't win manager of the year? Also, how pissed off will Cardinals fans be if we win the division, Madden wins manager of the year, Bryant wins rookie of the year, Rizzo wins MVP, and Arrieta wins a Cy Young? And he says, he said, mark down dim predictions.
Dim predictions have been duly noted.
I definitely like the optimism.
But anything we can do to kind of get under the skin of the NL Central right. where we hadn't in the past, you know, would be great.
Yeah. In a way I could see almost all of those things happening. I think probably the least likely is, I'm not sure Rizzo could win the MVP unless something happens with Clayton Kershaw. I wouldn't say it's likely that Arrieta will win the Cy Young, but I could easily see Madden winning manager of the year. If the Cubs get in the playoffs, I think it'd be pretty much a done deal.
Yeah, agreed.
Thanks, too.
We kind of already answered this, but Clint says, how much does Wainwright possibly being out for the season help the Cubs out? Like I said, I hate to think about it that way. I'd much rather beat the Cardinals at full strength.
Well, the other side of it is it really doesn't help them that. I mean, you think about how much you play a division rival, and that's significant compared to the other teams. But, you know, how many times are you going to face Wainwright in those?
Well, like two or three more times.
Two or three times. Yeah. So at most, it's a couple of wins. It's maybe two or three wins. Assuming you beat the guy that replaces him.
Right. And that's a big assumption, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's hard to... I mean, I suppose there is a way to quantify it, but
I suppose the broader perspective is Wainwright not pitching against other opponents helps the Cubs, you know, advance in the
But at the same time, then you could say, well, how much does you know, if there's an injury to a key Cubs player at some point, you know, I mean, I just think everything evens itself out. I just don't think. I don't know.
This is a pretty big one, but
that's true. That is true.
It definitely doesn't hurt, but like, you know, like we said, it's ideally the Cubs would beat the Reds or the Cardinals with Wainwright.
Yeah. Drew, who is at Go Freaking Cubs on Twitter, says, when do we start to get concerned about Soler's K rate? It's like 36% now and strikeouts in huge situations, two on, less than two outs, a lot.
See, I was going to say somebody should look up Soler's BABIP, speaking of BABIP, because I feel like he has gotten a little bit unlucky. Well, I mean,
strikeout rate
I guess that doesn't affect that. Okay,
he does lead all of baseball in strikeouts, I believe, like 28 or 29, something like that. Yeah.
Honestly, I'm not too worried about a 36% strikeout rate from a rookie. Let's not forget that strikeouts are really high in Major League Baseball right now. Obviously, his strikeout rate is a little higher than what you would like to see, but it was 24% last year, right around 20 in the higher levels in the minors. So I'm going to chalk his 36% rate up a bit, just a small sample size. He's also drawing more walks at the plate. He is swinging at a lot more balls outside of the strike zone, but he's seeing more pitches outside of the strike zone. So, you know, he's still a rookie. He's making adjustments, and I think it's something worth watching, but I don't know if I'm necessarily alarmed yet.
Yeah, I don't think he maintains this pace. I think he will strike out a significant number of times, but I don't think he ends the season as the league leader in strikeouts.
Right.
So I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, he's seeing, if you look, he's seeing a lot more pitches outside of the strike zone. And so I think maybe for the, you know, since he was called up, everything was kind of like there in the zone for him to hack away at. And now he's having to, like, he's going to have to, you know, get a little bit better with, you know, just controlling the zone and you know, identifying the pitches and stuff like that. So he's a rookie. I don't know. Like I said, not alarmed yet, but I think it's worth watching. Nathan says, would you trade Castillo for one really good bullpen arm right now? I don't think I can sit through another game with Brian Schlitter.
I guess I would probably take that deal. When you say really good bullpen arm, I think I can't think of a name, but
Kevin Gregg.
I would probably. Yeah. No, I'm going to decline that deal, but I would take a good right-handed bullpen arm at this point. Because I'm with you, Schlitter. Every time Schlitter comes in, I think, oh, geez.
I feel like Schlitter's gotten a little unlucky, though, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's...
But consistently unlucky.
Yeah, is maybe indicative of not something more than luck. But, I mean, how about that time where he had a pretty clear strikeout and then the next pitch got hit for a homer, right? Stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Ryan is at Hawkeye871 on Twitter. He says, what will be the proper response to bandwagon Cubs fans? We know they're coming, and I haven't had to deal with them for a while. That is true. We have not had bandwagon Cubs fans. I was thinking about that while I was mowing today. I spent a lot of time thinking about this question. And I think, you know what? The bandwagon fans are going to come, and if they do come, that's a good thing. That means that the Cubs are in a good position, and I think you just have to let them do their thing and just enjoy it for yourself. I don't know. I spent way too much time thinking about this today. I was kind of like thinking, you know what, in a way that's like, okay, you guys are not going to enjoy this where I'm going with this, but, in a way it's kind of, I'm a Notre Dame fan and
okay, you were right.
Enjoy it. Let's just go ahead and cut it off.
But here's the thing. Like, I understand that there are people that hate Notre Dame. I understand that most people hate Notre Dame, and I'm not going to change your mind.
Persecuted much?
I'm not going to change their mind, and they're not going to change my mind. And so I think the bandwagon stuff is kind of the same way. Like, you're not going, there's no point that, you know, like if somebody comes at me with all their anti-Notre Dame stuff, I'm just wasting my breath to even like have that discussion with them. So it's like, okay, yeah, do your thing, whatever. But I think that it's kind of similar with bandwagon jumpers. You're just gonna look silly if you try to say, like, you know, I appreciate this more than you do or anything like that. I think you just have to ignore them. And
yeah, I think the other side of it is bandwagon jumpers equal revenue, and revenue is good.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Baseball team, I mean, you're not gonna sell out games with hardcore fans every time. And you know, I think the other side, it's easy to call everybody a bandwagon, but I think there's a fair group of people that maybe you could call them sort of dormant fans. That
yes.
And I don't blame them. Like, you know, they're not quite as into it as we are, and that's okay. Like, they just kind of watch a game here and there, and they're still Cubs fans, but now that the Cubs are good, it's more exciting to watch, and I don't blame them for tuning in. No.
Unfortunately, they can't find them on TV. Yes.
Slipping.
Yeah, we went somewhere today. We went to a bar to watch the game for this afternoon for a while, and I wanted them to find the Cubs game, and she's like, oh, we don't get it. And then the owner came out later and found it, like, within seconds. Like, so they just kind of like assume that they just didn't get it. And I pointed out the channel to them, and then we were watching it.
You know? Yeah. I think that's a great point. I think it's going to be easy for people to say, oh, those people are bandwagon Cubs fans, when really they are just fans that couldn't stomach the last 5 years. And
right.
I can't just really you can't fault somebody for not wanting to sit through what we sat through. And to be perfectly honest, in a lot of ways, we didn't sit through the last 5 or 6 years. We started focusing on the minors, and not everybody's going to do that. You know,
let's be fair. I mean, I sat through the last 5 years.
That's true. I mean, we did.
A good chunk of it.
We did, but this season we are talking about the major league team a lot, and we're barely talking about the minors. Where before we did, you know, we would have spent time talking about what these guys, you know, the guys that are up right now, what they were doing in the minors. So I just you can't fault the casual Cubs fan, or, you know, just the typical Cubs fan for losing interest. And now they're coming back. And yeah, I think it's a good thing.
I don't think there's that many bandwagon fans, because the Cubs have so many fans in general.
Right.
It's just going to be people coming back to the team.
Right. Yep. Travis says, is Wood creating trade value? If wait a minute, is this Travis asking? Is this Travis Wood asking?
Yeah, it's Travis asking about it.
So is this Wood guy? Is he?
It's him. It's Travis.
It would be more obvious if it were like Bravis or like
Tarvis. Travis says, is Wood creating trade value? If so, who takes the fifth starting position, Wada or someone else? It just depends on when it happens. And
well, I think he's absolutely more valuable than, you know, if he weren't pitching. But I don't think the Cubs are in any position to be dealing him now. I think earlier in the year, we maybe thought he was an obvious trade deal. But, you know, with some of the injuries, especially like Turner being out, I think that you don't deal a guy yet. I don't know, maybe closer to July, we'll reassess.
Right, yeah.
I think if the Cubs are in contention near the trade deadline, we should see them make a couple moves. I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
But it would be tough for, you know, to see them deal the left-handed, you know, decent starting pitcher that they have.
Right.
To replace him with Wada.
I don't think that that's like a huge drop off. Wada's working his way back. He's back from injury and he's been pitching in the minors now.
He pitches tomorrow for Iowa.
It's worth noting that he's been pitching as a starter,
right.
Which you know, people have mentioned, what if he comes up and works in the bullpen for the Cubs? But it looks like the Cubs are just wanting to keep him stretched out.
Yeah. I think the Cubs are going to be really active around the trade deadline this year. I kind of mentioned this earlier, but the Cubs see this as a team that can compete if they do. And obviously they do by what they've done so far this year. I don't think they're going to sell out the future. I don't think they're going to sell out the next 5 years to try to make a push this year, but I think they will be pretty active. This is not a front office that sits on their hands. You know, whether they're unloading stuff and trying to pile up prospects, or, you know, whether they're trying to make the team on the field better right now, this is a very active front office.
Wait a second. Have you seen Theo's sitting style?
No, I haven't.
He might sit on his hands.
That's true. Actually, I did see him sitting at spring training. His hands were... Oh, he's on the phone. I assumed he was making a big deal, but apparently he wasn't. Bill is at Words Are Keen on Twitter, and Bill says, Rizzo's approach at the plate and adjustments. I guess he's just asking for a comment on that. He has yet again made them pitch him inside. Also, how stealing bases has become a weapon for the Cubs this year.
Yeah, I have zero fault with Rizzo's approach at the plate.
Right. Yeah.
He's amazing. Pitching inside. Yeah. We've talked about this, how his hit by pitch is definitely going to be one of the highest in the league because he stands right on top of the plate. So yeah, pitchers are going to have to keep trying to bust him in.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about it just in that game on Friday night, you know, how stealing bases really put the Cubs on Chapman too, really put the Cubs in a good position in that inning and how that made a difference. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun to watch them active on the base paths. And
well, and it's nice to see too, like they're not just doing it with like pure speed guys. It's not like they have,
right,
you know, Hamilton out there running bases like crazy. It's, you know, they're stealing bases in good,
they're picking situations. Their spots. Yeah.
Yep.
Josh says, do you think John Lester was a good signing? And do you think Baez is going to get traded? I guess we kind of already talked about Baez somewhat. Or no, we talked about Russell being traded. I have no... First off, with Lester, I think it's way too early to tell whether or not that was a good signing. I don't think Baez will get traded until he drives his value up a little bit more. And I'm not even positive he'd be traded then. I just don't.
But I do think there is something underlying here that somebody will get traded.
Why?
Somebody.
I don't know why that has to be, though.
We don't really want. Yeah, I don't know. I just.
Why does that have to be? I don't know. I don't like. I don't see.
Maybe you're right, but I just think that not everybody's going to pan out, and somebody's going to get traded.
Well, I think it's likely that not everybody's going to pan out, but I think that just shows that you don't have to get rid of anybody right now. There are spots for everyone that they have. There's a spot for right now. So I just don't see why they need to. I mean, unless it's like, well, yeah, you know, we have this big weakness, and so we're going to have to give up somebody that has value to, you know, to kind of shorten up that weakness or shore up that weakness. That's possible, but I don't know.
But I say that in a more of a two-year timeline, not a 6 months timeline.
Yeah. Jason says, if Schwarber keeps hitting like he is, will he be given the time to develop as a catcher, or will he be moved to left?
I think yes.
He will be given time to develop.
There's not an immediate need for him right now.
Right. Yeah.
And I think so for the time being, you can be patient with him and let him try to develop as a catcher.
Right. Yeah. I totally
when there's
agree.
A need, the transition from catcher to left is, I don't want to call it easy, but it's not a huge jump. And because
for someone like him, especially,
right, you're bringing him up pretty for his bat, and you know he's not going to be a stellar left fielder. So, you know that I think the transition is easy. So I think until you need him, you just keep him at catcher.
Yeah, yeah. I think you kind of develop him, and if you think that he can become a really good catcher, then you take your time with him, and that I think that's a you know we've you know look at how much more valuable catchers are right now than was perceived in years past. And I think if you can develop him into a really good catcher, then that's worth waiting a little bit. Jeremy says, how do you feel that Rizzo is going to steal 50 bases this year?
That'd be great if he was like,
Jeremy is like the most like optimistic guy I've ever met.
50 bases. Yeah, he's going to hit 50 home runs and steal 50 bases.
Right. Justin says, why does MLB.TV show commercial break in progress? Wouldn't it be better if they just kept a camera on the field? I want to watch the mascot race.
Speaking of that, did you guys see Bryant almost get nailed by the Cincinnati mascot race today?
No, I was listening on the radio. So,
you know, so anyway, he ran out to field, you know, to the field, and he almost got trampled by Mr. Red or whatever the name of that mascot is.
Oh man.
What if he had an injury from that? Oh. Like he got like trampled by Mr. Red, the big stupid baseball head.
That's so crap. Oh, that's so cubes.
I just would hope Rizzo would go after the Reds dugout if that happened.
Right, right. Justin says, do we ever see Mike Olt in a Cubs uniform in the majors again?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he's at least a good pinch hitter, second, third baseman.
Yep.
Left fielder.
Don says, what do you see happening when La Stella heals up? Does Addison start every game at second? Also, what is a reasonable expectation for the return of Grimm and Ramirez?
Well, I will say that Grimm has already started pitching again. In fact, I think he got a rehab assignment, if I'm not mistaken. He's at least been working
I think he's been in Arizona
for sure. Yeah, he's working his way back. Ramirez, there's not much news about him. And it sounds like that's going to be a much longer situation.
Yeah. I don't know. La Stella, I mean, I think, you know, the big pieces are up, and I think that players like La Stella and, you know, any of those other guys, I think they just kind of fit in around them when they need them to. And, you know, like Herrera, you know, guy, I mean, I think La Stella is more valuable than Herrera, but still La Stella is not your second baseman of the future. And so if Russell's playing well at second, I don't think there's any reason to bump him off of it.
Agreed.
James says, so what happens with Baez third base? Bryant looks comfortable in the outfield. So yeah, we kind of touched on that. I think that's kind of what I would see happening if Baez plays well. Mike says, is it just me or is Lester's inability to throw to bases a much bigger deal than what people are making it out to be? Clearly he's proven that he has been effective even while not throwing to bases, but I feel like his yips are exposed now more than ever and teams will start exploiting it more and more. The Hamilton runs and the Cincy start were a joke. Both of those runs were scored on fielder's choices that wouldn't have been possible if Hamilton had not been able to waltz around the bases at will. I realize this is Billy Hamilton we're talking about, but that was just too easy even for him. Once he got on, Lester looked absolutely helpless. It looks like his first 10 Ks have overshadowed all of that.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I didn't say it was a bit of a concern, but it's just weird.
Yeah.
But we also saw this with Chris Bryant, not on on check plays or to first, but like fielding grounders and throwing to first. Remember, you just throw it straight into the ground. So yeah, it's weird, but I don't know. I just have to hope that his potential as a dominant starter,
right,
will outweigh that.
Well, and to kind of go along with, I mean, he goes on and says, also, is there any concern that these throwing issues could potentially creep into his pitching ability? I think that's what he's probably trying to avoid. I think he's figuring, you know what, my ability to you know, be a dominant starter, I think that's more important than my ability to check over to first base. And like he said, I mean, it's Billy Hamilton. He's going to run on pretty much everybody. So I don't know. I just, I don't know. I guess I need to see more.
Concern to me. It's weird.
Yeah.
Guy should be able to throw from the mound to first.
Right. I think we just need to see more of like what teams do against him. And we haven't, you know, I think you have to look at like half a season or something like that. And I don't know. He said, because of all this, do you think the signing came with an added risk that the boys in the front office didn't consider? $155 million is a whole lot of money, just saying. I don't know.
I'm not there yet. I'm not doubting it yet. I'm not doubting the spend.
No. No. All right. Well, I think that's all of them that we have. And I think there's maybe a few that came in late, but we've already gone way over and we're just not able to get them to all of them today. So if we didn't get to your question, you know, just send it to us again and we'll do it next week. Kurt, do you have a scary stat of the week for us?
I do. I'm going to go with, Anthony Rizzo. It's nice to see how, you know, solid he's been offensively. Of course, defensively, he's been really good too, but I'm going to focus on offense. In the last 10 days, he's had 28 at bats, 12 hits, a couple of doubles, a home run, and four walks. And so his batting average is .429 for those last 7 days. And I think, you know, more broadly, his total season on base percentage is .481, which leads all of baseball. And so that's pretty amazing. And we discussed early on in this, on some of the early podcasts about, you know, Rizzo number two and batting earlier in the lineup at two or three or wherever he falls, but, you know, getting more at bats, and it seems to be paying off. Like he's getting on base, a ton, you know, more than anybody.
Right.
So it's been great to see. I mean, a .481 batting average, that's, you know, essentially half the time he's on first. So that's
on base percentage, not batting average, right?
Yes, OBP is .481 on the season, but his batting average in the last 7 days is .429.
Oh, yeah. Yep, it's been a lot of fun to watch. I mean, obviously he's not going to be able to keep it up at that rate, but it's fun to watch. All right, Internet Muscle Flex, do you guys have anything?
I have one.
Okay, I have one too. Go ahead with yours, Andy.
Sure. Cubs Facebook, once again, coming through for me. The Cubs posted a picture of some babies wearing Cubs gear and stuff. some cute pictures of cute babies wearing Cubs gear to bring the stupid flexors out of the woodwork. But anyway, the Cubs posted these pictures of babies, and they said, they captioned them, "We love introducing new members to our hashtag Cubs family. 15-month-old, and then there's a name, caught his first Cubs game of many during the last homestand. Welcome, go Cubs go." One commenter said he will still be waiting for a Cubs World Series. Like, just this old dude, he will still be waiting for, what do you mean, like next week? Yes, that's true. He'll still be waiting for one next week. Congratulations on your vague idiocy.
Oh man, I would imagine that was a gold mine in there. You only found one?
Yeah, actually there was only that one.
Huh, that's surprising.
On that thread, but I'm sure given some time they'll accumulate some more.
Right. Mine comes from a Cubs.com article, and the article is titled "Lester Improves, Strikes Out 10 Against Reds." And this commenter says, "Still not good enough for a chump that makes over $900,000 per start. Eight innings of one run ball at least. Dunce Theodore, enough with the lucrative contracts."
Dunce. Oh, that sounds like one of the regulars.
I don't know. Look, 8 innings, 1 run at least.
Every time.
Right, right. I love it. Enough with the lucrative contracts. They've given one. Oh, man. All right. Well, that does it for this week's episode. This episode was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. A special thanks to our Hall of Fame level contributors, Jeremy, Dave, Dizzle, David, Dallas, Charles, Stewart, Jane, Cass, Tony, Shane, Michael, John, Andrew, Richard, Rick, Rick, Craig, Luke, and Tony. Our Patreon associate producers are Matt Macer, Anthony Hutfels, Joshua Hansen, Ryan Shores, Brian Hunt, Tim Marr, and Jason Nunn. Brian stepped up from being a from a lower pledging level to become an associate producer this week. So welcome, Brian. And also thanks to David and Tony for jumping on the Patreon campaign this week. Patreon is kind of like Kickstarter for bloggers and podcasters. Pledging levels start as low as $1 a month, and the perks get better as they go up. $1 a month, it's really just pocket change, and it makes a huge difference for us, helps us pay the bills, and make everyone's IVMB experience better. You can check it out at patreon.com/IVMB. That's patreon.com/IVMB. So this week, the Cubs return to Wrigley Field. They play the Pirates Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. They have an off day on Thursday, and then the Brewers come to town. Everyone else has had their chance to beat up on the Brewers. I'm glad we finally have a chance to take it a crack at them now, too. I believe that 8 of the first 10 series for the Cubs this year have been against NL Central teams, and I think you have to like how they're doing so far. I think it's a good sign. So I am headed off to another conference this week. So our midweek episode will be another interview episode. You can look for that late Wednesday night or early Thursday morning. We will be back next Sunday evening. And until then, go Cubs!